afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson here with Tim Marks on the board, Gracie on the phone lines, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome to Live the Promise. So, so glad you tuned in today, and a very happy Tuesday to you. I hope you're staying cool. I know it's a little hot out there. I love it. Actually love the heat, as you probably know if you listen with any regularity. I took my dog for a four-mile run this morning. Very happy about that.
That's a long ways in this heat.
It is, but if it gets 60 degrees, it's cold for me, and I'm working out indoors. I'm a total wimp when it comes to the cold. But, boy, we've got a fun show for you planned today. Our genius friend Mark Senius is in studio with us. He's a great voice and a thinker on pop culture and its effect on us as believers and on the church. And so today we're going to analyze two movies. He picked one and I picked one. So Mark's choice is Cinderella Man with Russell Crowe. I happen to love that movie. And my choice is Ever After with Drew Barrymore. And I know Mark really loved that movie as well. It's kind of a chick flick. But
I was shocked that you picked it.
I'm trying to picturing you at home going, I have to watch this chick flick. It's part of my job.
I watched it last night.
And you loved it. I know it.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, I post a daily Facebook question that's related to our show's topic. And so my question today was, do you have a favorite underdog movie? And so that's my question to you. And I want you to know I went out and bought one extra copy of Ever After. It's a Cinderella story with Drew Barrymore, really one of my most favorite movies. Mm. And so for the first caller who gets on the air to share your favorite underdog movie, you get the movie. Otherwise, those who get on after her or him, whoever calls, will get books off of our Faith Radio shelf. So do you have a favorite underdog movie? I want to know about it. 877-933-2484. 1-877-933-2484. Now, though he needs no introduction, Mark Senius, the genius, there
and
you go.
Now, Minnesota Broadcasting Association Award winner, Disney Dayton.
Hey, this is the professor, the professor. Hey, there's the professor, the professor. Hey, this is the professor.
We got some ink out on the freeway.
I'm Mark Senior.
Mark Senior.
You are my beautiful, my sweet, sweet snow.
I am an S-E. I am an S-E-I-G-N-I-U-S.
Mark Senior. Mark Senior.
I am a genius. Get right with genius. I'm an S-E-I-G-N-I-U-S.
Hey, there's the professor.
I'm Mark Senior.
I have no credibility.
So, as you can tell, he is famous. So, I'm going to tell you a little bit about him for real.
He worked, redefine that word for you.
I'm going to redefine genius. And you're going to just appreciate Mark's genius as you hear him talk. So, I'm really putting the bar up high here. But he worked in radio for 20 years before joining Northwestern College's staff. He worked at 8 different stations in 4 markets, San Diego, Seattle, Sacramento, and Twin Cities. He joined the Northwestern College faculty in 2001. This is true, bringing a wealth of talent and knowledge to the students in broadcasting. Every student I've met who works with him is crazy about him. They really put him on a pedestal. They love his wit, his wisdom, his heart for the Lord. So his students have won more than 40 national and regional awards, including over half of the awards offered by the National Religious Broadcasters in each of the last 2 years. He has a passion for the supremacy of Christ. He enjoys camping, fly fishing, music, film, cooking, eating, and spending time with his wife and children. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you with us, Mark.
Thank you. I feel like my head is starting to swell. I won't be able to get out through the door, be like one of those Miss Peach cartoon characters, you know.
It won't take you long. Yeah, I do know what you're... But we're so glad to have you with us today. And this is really a fun thing. We'd like to have you on with some regularity, and you have a lot to say about pop culture. So before we get into our two movies, I want to know, is there a passage of Scripture that the Lord's been talking about these days?
Yeah, I just went on vacation with my family, met my mom and dad, and my brother's family has 2 daughters and married for 19 years. And we all gathered in Estes Park, Colorado, Rocky Mountain. And so as soon as kind of got out of the car, you could see the mountains, just Psalm 121 really just echoed through my heart and my head. And, you know, when I look to the hills, where does my help come from? It comes from the Lord. And so just that entire just was meditating on that. You can't help it. And I love just that feeling of being so tiny with the mountains that surround you here. You know, they're 14,000 feet, and you have these, you know, just all these stars sort of everywhere. And, you know, and then, you know, my help comes from the Lord who made the heaven and the earth. And I just love that feeling of being so small and tiny and God being so big and vast and, you know, the creator of everything. And yet we are not insignificant in that. I mean, he created us in his image. And so, so that's kind of what's been on my heart.
Wow. Just hearing you talk that way just, again, makes my heart beat faster. When you think that not only he created the earth, but he created the galaxies, he created the solar system, and we are a tiny speck on a very small planet. And so we are so small, but we're so everything to him. Isn't that just a wonder when you think about it?
I mean, it's so, you know, as far as the east is from the west, you know, it's that, you know, he's so gigantic, infinitely gigantic, and we are so finitely small. It's like the complete opposite spectrum, and yet we are completely loved and encompassed. And even as Psalm 121 continues, that, you know, the Lord is your keeper, he's your shade at your right hand, you know, the sun's not going to strike you by day or the moon by night, but he'll keep you from evil, he will keep your life, he will keep you. You're going out and you're coming in from this time forth and forevermore. This small little tiny Susie, this teeny weeny little Mark.
With the big head.
Exactly. With a gigantic, you know, head.
But it is, it's so beautiful.
He's got Tim and Grace and just probably little
tiny little guy. There's this disproportionate one with the big head. I love him too.
But I love to eat too, so I'm a little bit bigger and then I get a little bit smaller on vacation.
No, but that is just so, so beautiful and so true. And that he would think so much of us, that he would send his son, and he would think so much of us that he put our name on his hand. And I think you have to think of these two things together when you think of God, his vastness and his intimacy, because to me, otherwise you miss the picture of who he is.
It's like I don't know who, it was Jonathan Edwards, I think, wrote this. I don't, maybe it was somebody else. I don't remember, but God is like this mosaic. When you look up close, you know, when you make things that are in a mosaic or like one of those dot paintings like George Sherratt makes of Day in the Life, Sunday in the Park with George, I think is the big painting where it's just made with dots and you're up close and it's like, well, this doesn't make any sense. And then you stand back and you look at this picture and it's like, wow, that's just a bunch of dots, but it looks, you know, so together. That's, you know, kind of
that's
the kingdom for
great
me.
Analogy. Excellent. Yes, well, we've got Rosalind from St. Cloud. She wins the wonderful Ever After movie, so I want to hear what her underdog movie is that she likes. Welcome to the show, Rosalind.
Oh, hi, Susie. Thank you.
Absolutely. How are you today?
I'm very well. I'm actually running between meetings, so I said, well, let me just call. I was listening to the radio in the car.
Oh, good.
And then when I got to the parking lot, I said, you know, let me call and see. You never know. So
that's
I'm
right.
Glad.
You won, absolutely. Do you hope you have time to give Grace your address? And if you don't, email it to us. I don't want you late for your meeting. So what's your movie?
My favorite underdog movie is Life is Beautiful. Mm.
I don't know that one, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's a Roberto Benigni.
Roberto Benigni's movie.
I'm going to rent it.
Yeah,
you should.
Yeah, I believe it won an Academy Award in...
It did, yep.
I don't remember the year, but yeah, it was this film where this, he gets into a concentration camp essentially, but he's always super positive and upbeat.
That is the one my sister told me about it when he's marching off and his son is under the bed and he's trying to make him think that he's playing a game. Oh my goodness, that might have to be my new favorite. Rosalind, thank you so much for your call and we'll get you out this movie. I appreciate it. Well, what about you? Do you have a favorite underdog movie? We'd love to hear about it. 877-933-2484. Well, this is why I love having you on, Mark, because we've already been just talking for a few minutes and haven't even touched on our topic because we were talking about scripture and the word. And I love that you're right there with me, you know?
Yeah, so, and just, you know, as little foundation as we set this up, I mean, media, it's certainly all around us. And, you know, just remember that God did create the world and we didn't. We are fallen. We're mistake prone. We're sinful. God isn't. We are created in his image. And he's given us this gift to create. And so we're these little creators. We are able to speak. We're able to write things down. We're able to do Facebook, or we're able to write a letter to our family or a friend, or write a birthday card or whatever. We're able to do all these kind of things. And media is very neutral. And it doesn't really care one way or another about us because it's, well, it's inanimate. It's nothing. But we do have dominion over it. I mean, God gives us dominion over the things that are in this world and that he's created. And so we just need to remember that media is neutral. We do have dominion over it. But the people who make media are not neutral. I mean, there's a worldview that comes to every piece of film and to every message. I mean, what you create, you have your worldview, which sort of defines who you are. And media does influence and it does reflect. I mean, just look at the USA World Cup. I mean, everybody was, you know, talking about that and, oh, you know, will she get another header goal? And just very, you know, big excitement around that. So media does influence and it reflects. And so that's just a little foundation mm-hmm. as we sort of dive into this. That we need to actively go into media and in our choices and to really open up our eyes and open up our hearts and
be discerning.
Yeah, and not and you know I don't want my children to be naive. I want them to be innocent, but I don't want them to be naive. So, you know, we do watch a fair amount of media, probably too much in my wife's eyes, but we do enjoy it quite a bit, but we're always kind of talking about it and sometimes more than others, but at least it's never inactive. It's never passive. It's always actively watching.
Well, you know, this is a lot of the stuff that you're seeing, not at all that this advocates for watching trash, but what I'm saying is certain things are in movies that they're in the hallways at school as well. And so for us, there's, you know, my boys, I've shared this on the show a number of times, but they have said that they have learned to be critical thinkers by the way we watched movies, because I would pause the remote a lot and say, okay, that's what pride looks like. You don't like this guy right now. You know why? It's because he's displaying pride. Why are you drawn to him? Because he's humble. That's what humility looks like. And there are times where they would roll their eyes and get so frustrated by my little interruptions, but it's really helped them to become critical thinkers. Now, I'm glad you sort of set the stage here because, you know, you're going to have to, there's some swear words in Cinderella Man that mm-hmm. will offend, you know, but the story to me is so full of virtue. And maybe you could just set it up. Russell Crowe sure. plays James Braddock. Tell us, set up the story for us.
Yeah, James Braddock is essentially this boxer. Just a quick note here while I look up my notes for James Braddock here, just one second, that you brought up language. There is quite a bit of language in the film. But interestingly enough, out of all the characters, I mean, pretty much every character says a pretty harsh, strong word. I mean, there's no, like, you know, major words, if memory serves. But you look at the character that Russell Crowe plays in this movie, Jim Braddock, he never, ever, ever swears in this movie. He never uses inappropriate language ever in this film, and it's a really remarkable look at just that character of the words that we choose and the integrity that he has in this film.
But, and the industry he's in, Mark, because
correct.
He's in the boxing world, but he also works on the docks, and it's during the Adrian, and it's in the Depression
right.
time. So you put a guy in the docks, you put a guy in the boxing world, in language, you know, and in such hard times. And so he, to me, his character represents something so amazing. And it's a true story.
Right.
And I just want to reset real quick in case you tuned in wondering what we're talking about. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. We've got our good friend Mark Genius. I'm sorry.
Just rhymes with genius. That's
genius.
It.
I can't even believe I did that by accident. But anyway, he's here. He's really, I feel like, a forward thinker in pop culture, how it affects us as believers. He's on faculty here at Northwestern College, and he's a good friend of the show. We're analyzing two movies today. First half, we'll talk about Cinderella Man and maybe even go past the break because we're just getting into it. And then we're going to talk about Ever After. Both really are Cinderella stories in their own right. Mm-hmm. One's a chick flick, one's a guy movie, but I like them both a lot. So set it up for us.
So it's a Depression area. It's James Braddock. The movie opens with Braddock winning this, you know, another fight, and he comes home with his wife. She doesn't realize whether he's won mm-hmm. or not, and you just get the look of anguish on her face because their livelihood is so tied to, you know, how well he does, and he strings her along, and, you know, and then he wins, and just in the opening scene of this movie where James Braddock comes in and he's this boxer and he's this up and coming fighter, just really sets a stage of this wonderful marriage between Braddock and his wife, played by Renee Zellweger. And so then it cuts to 5 years in the future, and they're in hard times. You know, there's plenty of money flush in the opening scenes of this movie, and now they are basically in the slums. They're in the slums, the shack. They can't pay for anything. Their, you know, electricity, milk, all of these things are just not easily obtained. He fights. He's getting older. He breaks his hand. Then he can't fight. And so he's just trying to get it, you know, trying to make ends meet any way that he can throughout the Depression era, just working in the shipyards. And because he broke his right hand, he can't box. So he has to just use his left.
And he was decommissioned because he wanted to fight, even though his trainer saw it, your hand's not healed yet. He's like, I got to feed my family. And it was a disaster. And then he was decommissioned because it wasn't much of a show.
And so, you know, just it's this series of unfortunate events. And basically, at one point, the wife, Renee Zellweger, just, you know, maybe we need to send our kids off to the sister, and we can't possibly, you know, that's what we're going to have to do because we can't make ends meet. We have to keep our children fed. And he's like, no, makes this promise to the family that we'll never do that. And so there's this real intense struggle between, you know, this battle with pride and yet still trying to maintain headship in the family and a submissive wife, and but still a firm, solid, and, you know, complementary role in that relationship, and very, very beautiful to watch them work and to have conversations. And you see his heart as in one particular scene where, you know, they've had no food on the table, and he basically lies to his kid that, you know, oh, I had a steak earlier. I mean, he, you know, it's clear that he's just making it up. And then, you know, he gives his one slice of ham you know, just to his child so that, you know, the child was still really hungry. And so he goes without eating. And
actually, since I watched this last night, what happened was he was ready to give her the bologna or ham. And she's like, aren't you hungry? And he said, well, I actually had this dream last night of this steak dinner, and I woke up full.
Yeah.
And then he hands her, but you know, that, and he's working these long days, and that to me was so precious. And then his son steals salami. And you could totally tell that this guy is a man of honor and commands great respect. And so then he comes home one day to find out that his son had stole salami sitting in the corner. And the whole family's shocked, which I liked because there was like a stigma attached to stealing. We don't steal in this family. So everybody is sort of almost traumatized. Do you remember how he handles that with his son?
Well, then he basically takes his son and he goes to the salami store and makes his son give back the salami and face the salami guy and, this, you know, the butcher. And then they take care of that business. He comes out and then, you know, he tries to get to the heart of the matter. You know, what is it that made you want to steal? And his son basically just wanted to, you know, help provide. He knew that
and
we needed food.
And not be sent away.
I don't want to be sent away like, you know.
His friends, he said.
Friends, exactly. All his friends are going away. And then he sits down, looks at his son in the eye, and makes this real big, huge promise that I will never, ever do that. We are a family. We're going to stick together. And integrity is what really matters. A man's integrity is you have to be truthful. And I, you know, I'm going to be truthful to you, and you can tell me anything. Just this real tender moment where, you know, your initial reaction would be rage and how could you ever do such a thing? And but yet through that whole scene, it's just this model of how you can interact with your child without, you know, causing them to get all frustrated or crazy, and yet you are establishing this leadership, this headship in your child, and yet laying the ground rules of what is right and good.
Well, I loved how he really was seeing into the soul of his kid. He didn't conk him on the head, as you said, you know, how could you do this? He was like, almost like giving him the benefit of the doubt, like, I know you better than this. What's underneath this? He took time to get at his level. And you're surrounded by people walking by in kind of drab clothes. It was clearly a hard time for everybody. And he's having this, you know, caring so much about his character. And I wrote down what he said to him. He said, just because things aren't easy doesn't mean we have an excuse to take what doesn't belong to us. We don't steal, no matter what. And to me, that was one of those jaw-dropping moments where it's like, here, they really were watering down their milk. They had their electricity turned off and are lighting their house by candles. They were breaking off wood from a local fence to throw it on their fire to keep their kids warm. They were in hard times. And he's like, when things are hard, you don't take what doesn't belong to you, even then, you know.
Pastor at my church tells the story of this dad who was at a store, and they were putting the groceries in the car, and the dad said, you know, son, can you please put the cart back in the little cart corral, please? And the kid said, no, I don't want to do that. Why do we have to do that? And then gets in the car. And the dad kind of, you know, slumped his shoulders and was about ready to get in the car. And then this breath of life comes into him. He stands up straight. He goes over to the other side of the car, opens up the car, and says, you know, son, there are people that don't put the grocery cart back, and there are families that don't put the grocery cart back, and there are families that do. We are a family that puts the grocery cart back. And the kid put the grocery cart back. And so we as dads or moms or, you know, just in families, to take that stand, you know, to be firm and yet act, do everything in love. And so the verse is 1 Corinthians 6:13. It's like, you know, be firm, stand strong in the faith, act like men, do everything in love. And so that whole scene with the son, that tender moment is sort of wrapped around that, where it's like, you know, he's firm. You know, you got to act like a man. You know, we don't steal. It's not what we do here. And that, yet he did it with this, you know, this hand out. He's down on his knees at the eye level of his child. And, you know, it's like, oh, I wish there's probably, I can think of 100 moments with my own children that I wish I'd just gotten down on a knee instead of just being kind of reactionary and angry.
Well, it really confronts our entitlement mentality, because those were hard times. And I know people are on hard times now, but it is so easy to, you know, yesterday we had Daniel Darling on, and he said, we're conditioned for the good life. He said, that's our mindset. That's our mentality. That's what we think is owed to us. And so to see in really such incredible times, people living basically under cardboard boxes in many cases, and saying, even in this situation, we're not going to take from another person. And he was just not afraid of hard work. And at one point, though, he goes to the docks. He gets, because he'd go every day and stand at the fence with hundreds of other guys. And they would pick 5, 6 people, and they'd get to work. Everybody else would have to leave. Well, he came home from a day on the docks, and his kids were gone because one of them was very, very sick. His wife panicked, and so she sent them away to her relatives, and he flipped out. And what was amazing to me, you know, he got very upset. That was, I think, the only real conflict you saw where he was so upset. And he left, and you don't know where he's going, but he goes in the welfare line. And the lady at the welfare office said, of all the people, I never thought I'd see you here. And then he goes to the boxing executive's office, and they're all sitting in the high back chairs in a beautiful building, smoking their cigars. Didn't look like they had fallen on hard times. Takes his hat off, puts it in his hand. I've never seen a man look so broken. I mean, Russell Crowe captured his brokenness, his hat in his hand, going, my kids are gone. I'm not even here about boxing right now. Mm. My kids are gone. I want to bring them back. And he starts to ask for money. Talk about that scene. How did that land on you?
Well, to swallow enough pride and to actually basically beg in front of all these people that you used to work with, and you know, you're at wit's end, you've got nothing else. And he does it. And yet it's like, you know, come on, I have nowhere else to turn. You're the only people that I know. I've tried to do this on my own. I tried to do this in many other ways. This is all I've got left. Please help. And it was out of that, and, you know, just that, that passionate plea that he found some compassion from his it was his brother-in-law? I can't remember exactly.
Well, his trainer gave him some money, but some of the people gave him money in that boxing, you know, in the association. Others turned their head. And,
it's really very painful scene to see who does help and who doesn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the attitude of, well, you're washed up, and here we are in our country club. You know, we're in the boxing club, and we're entitled to be here. And it was sort of out of that sort of one more chance comes.
Right.
And so... and you know, God works all things together for good in this movie. And there's all sorts of backstories and other little stories that are going along, and you can see the character in the heart of James Braddock sort of through it all, where he's steadfast through this entire movie, even as the world is collapsing around him. Unlike some other characters that he has befriended in it, that turn to alcohol and eventually, you know, get killed by that, essentially. And but yet he remains steadfast, and he gets this opportunity. And because of this working on the docks and his right hand being broken, having to use his left more, God then used that weakness. And so James Braddock suddenly had a left.
Yeah.
He had a left hook, which he didn't have before. And so, and, you know, he became this completely different fighter when he, and, you know, he became